I'd like to call the House Special Committee on Energy to order on April 9th, 2009 at approximately 3:05. We have members in attendance, Representative Tuck, Representative Dahlstrom, Representative Ramirez, Representative Peterson, myself, Co-Chair Edgman, and we may have online Co-Chair Millett. And if we don't have her online now, she may be joining us here shortly. We have before us today four bills on the agenda: House Bill 163, which is Alaska Natural Gas Development Authority; House Bill 182, the Rail Belt Energy and Transmission Corporation; and two bills that we're going to hear and for purposes of having introductory hearings for today: House Bill 191, dealing with nuclear power production and waste transportation; and House Bill 148, Energy Efficiency Plan and Grant Fund. And it's the chair's intent to offer the sponsors an opportunity to come up and introduce the bills, and we'll set those aside for hearings at a later time. As usual, we ask everybody to keep their cell phones in the off mode. And committee members, any comments or observations before we get started? With that, Mr. Balash, do you want to come to the table? And we will begin our discussion on where we left off with House Bill 163. I do believe we may have a discussion on one amendment today. But Mr. Balash, do you want to introduce yourself, please? And
thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Joe Balash. Just quick recap. Senate or House Bill, 163, is a bill introduced, brought forward by the governor, that would open up the authority of the Alaska Natural Gas Development Authority, voter-created authority, put on the ballot in 2002. With explicit statutory language to take North Slope gas to Tidewater. The language, if the statute was amended by the legislature in 2004 to look at Cook Inlet in addition to Prince William Sound as far as the Tidewater destination. And what we are seeking to do here in this bill is basically take the blinders off the horse, allow ANGDA to look at gas supplies other than the North Slope and to look at destinations other than Tidewater and South Central Alaska. So that's the 60-second version of it, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. Balash. And let the record reflect that Representative Johansson has joined us. Any questions or comments while Mr. Balash is at the table? House Bill 163. We also may have a couple of individuals on the line, and I need a reminder. Did we close public testimony? Does the record reflect on this bill? I can't recall if we left public testimony open or not. Let's take a brief at ease. It's my understanding that a member has an amendment that he wants to bring forward.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. If it's appropriate, and while Mr. Balash is here so that he may offer some comments, if you're ready, I'd like to move amendment number one to House Bill 163.
And I'll object for purposes of discussion. Representative Ramirez.
Thank you. Mr. Chair, I have become increasingly alarmed with ANGDA's recklessness and inability to play well with others. And I think we have a unique situation similar to the time in the national elections between the primary and the general election, where the late night talk show hosts made fun of Bill Clinton for not being able to utter the words Barack Obama.
Representative Millett, is that you online?
No, this is Paul Middle-Initial D. Kendall. Is this Edmund?
You're patched into the Energy Committee, and we are hearing from Representative Ramirez at the moment.
Okay, well, I wasn't aware I was on the air.
Okay. Well, thank you for being online, and I'll turn the floor back over to Representative Ramirez.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I'll try to be brief. The fact is that Governor Palin, who I support very much in her efforts to work on an in-state gas bullet line, has a project, and she has indicated that she has a project manager, and that project manager is Harry Noah. And ANGDA, through the stewardship of Executive Director Harold Hines, seems to be trying to pull the wagon in a different direction and is having a difficult time yielding control of the destiny of the state of Alaska to initiate what is going to be a very complex transaction anyway, to have an in-state gas pipeline. And so House Bill 163, and that language is now finding its way into another bill that this committee has previously heard and moved, gives a great deal more of authority to ANGDA. It's a clarification bill, but it also expands the authority of ANGDA. And Mr. Chair, Amendment Number 1, if members will look particularly at Section 4, Section 4 is required approval. And if I may read, Mr. Chair, the authority may not exercise the power in AS 41.41 without the prior written approval of the governor, after the governor finds that the project proposed or being developed by the authority is in the best interest of the state. The governor shall give written notice to the authority of the approval or denial of approval. And simply put, the concern that I have is that ANGDA is increasingly becoming a dysfunctional group that is not following the instructions of the state of Alaska. And I believe, Mr. Chair, if you ask Mr. Balash about some of the specific tasks that ANGDA has been charged with, you will find that they have a spotty record of executing some of those specific instructions over the last 6 months. And I believe that this amendment gives more control to the governor of ANGDA at this point and is a good public policy for the state of Alaska. And so far as Section 3 addresses the famed B2F project, Beluga to Fairbanks, which has been the project put forward by ANGDA over the last half year. And for those of us that were back in D.C. in Energy Council, we met with the job pipeline safety people, and they pleaded with us that there really wasn't an agency they hoped in Alaska that was trying to lay black plastic pipe on the ground from Glen Allen up to, or from Beluga up to Glen Allen. And so Section 3 recognizes the state's liability for a project like that, and Section 4 swings the authority of ANGDA under the governor, at least through this rocky period of time, till we have a little more clarity with how ANGDA is going to function as a productive quasi-entity of the state of Alaska. I'd be interested in Mr. Balash's point of view.
Thank you, Representative Ramos. Mr. Balash, we've all just seen this amendment just moments ago, and you prepared to offer a few remarks at this time?
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I, too, just was able to review the amendment and am not able to convey a particular position of the administration or the governor on this particular amendment. I would observe, however, that there are not very many places in statute where a governor makes a finding. Those are duties typically assigned to a commissioner in an agency with expertise in the particular matters at hand. That said, anytime Representative Ramirez would like to give the governor more authority to make decisions, I'd be happy to take him up on it.
Through Representative Ramirez.
Through the Chair, Mr. Chairman, in this case, I think it's a great deal safer for the state's interest for the governor to have more authority in this regard. Just last night we saw a news cycle that showed, ANGDA failing to recognize the direction that the state and Governor Palin have directed us. And you can't have too many people out in front on an issue, and I'm afraid that ANGDA is trying to protect their fiefdom and set energy policy for the state of Alaska. And so I will continue to look to the governor for leadership on this issue of an in-state gas pipeline as it relates to us finding a project manager who is capable of moving this project forward in a reasonable way and not by committee.
Representative Ramos, in the interest of the chair allowing you to bring the amendment forward and certainly to introduce it as a concept, knowing that the bill has two more committees to go through, and in the interest of the remaining time left in session and the chair's intent to possibly move Hospital 163 today, it'd be my desire if you could pull your amendment, if you would, please.
I'm happy to defer to the chair. And with that, I'll withdraw amendment number one.
And I will turn to remove my objection along the way. We do have, concerning public testimony, a handful of individuals online. So at this time, we'll start public testimony. And Bob Fabretto, are you online?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. My name is Bob Fabretto from Kenai. I'm a board member of the Alaska Natural Gas Development Authority since its inception. I think what I'll just defer to our CEO, Harold Hines, who I know is online, to listen to his comments. But one thing I'd just like to say, and then I'll turn it back over to you, Mr. Chair, is that I'm a little bit disturbed about Representative Ramos's comments. If he was in attendance at the board meeting last month as well as yesterday, and the conversation, the dialogue between the board and Mr. Noah and myself and other members, and where we were and where we are and where we're going, I think it's important that maybe Harold echo that to the board, and I'll leave it at that, Mr. Chairman. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I have a brief question for
Representative
Mr. Fabretto. Mr. Fabretto, who's in charge of an in-state gas pipeline, Harold Hines or Harry Noah?
The statute clearly states, Representative Ramos, through the chair, that ANGDA has the authority to buy gas, sell gas, build a pipeline, sell a pipeline. Mr. Noah is a representative appointed by Governor Palin, who has sat at the table at the last two board meetings. And it has been a little unclear at the beginning, and yesterday it became quite clear as to the direction the governor and Mr. Noah and, would like to see ANGDA go. And I think Harold will echo those comments.
And with that, let's go to Mr. Hines online. Harold, can you identify yourself for the record, please, and your affiliation?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Harold Hines. I'm the Chief Executive Officer, Executive Director of the Alaska Natural Gas Development Authority. Number one, Mr. Chairman, I have not seen the amendment, and so I really have no knowledge of that I could even make a comment as to its purpose or whatever. I take great difference with the general characterization of Representative Ramos towards the functioning of the Alaska Natural Gas Development Authority. Certainly the last several months have been a difficult period for us because of a number of conditions imposed upon us by factors within the administration. Basic goings-on of ANGDA have been evolving since 2003 when we actually started operating, and in particular in July of last year, the governor challenged us to do a number of things, one of which was to provide as best we could and as soon as we could some energy relief to the communities in the interior, and in particular the community represented by Representative Ramos Fairbanks. And to that end, we took our Spurline project, which we've been working on for a number of years, linking the big pipeline to the Cook Inlet area, and attempted to modify it in a way that it might be of some use in providing gas from Cook Inlet on an interim basis to Fairbanks. Additionally, we revisited the entirety of a longer-term plan related to propane and making propane available throughout the state to a large number of communities, and were able to develop an opportunity to look at potentially the production of propane on the North Slope and trucking, barging, along the Yukon River, along the highway system in the Fairbanks, and potentially across the over the top of the Beaufort Sea to western Alaska, for instance. In addition to that, ANGDA's main focus has continued to be on working in compatible way with both the TransCanada and Denali pipeline proposals, which have been the mainstay of the state's and the governor's approach to getting North Slope gas to market. And in particular, our concern has been that in the federal open season process for the state to enjoy the benefits of capturing that gas on interstate commerce back into the state market and using it under the most cost-effective and best consumer deal terms requires that we participate in the open season. And that has been a major emphasis of ours. In addition, all the plans we're aware of, all whether they be going direct to the North Slope with small lines or others, all require some sort of intermediate type steps to bridge the gap from where we are today in terms of the energy picture in various communities to that longer term good world where we can tap into North Slope gas. And we've worked on a number of things related to that.
Sure.
I would characterize our efforts to date as very much on target with the program that's been laid out with the governor. I would certainly find it very hard for a representative of this administration to say that we have not been responsive to the needs of the governor. In this case, the legislation before you was introduced with the intention of clarifying in the longer term ANGDA's broad authorities as it related to financing projects. And in particular, many people believe that our purpose is to build a project. It's not. ANGDA has that ability within its authorities, but its emphasis has been on moving the projects forward in the early phases to cut the risk for the private sector and to provide an opportunity for financing in such a way that the ultimate consumer within the state here receives the benefit of the better financing terms that could be obtained by a political subdivision of the state.
Mr. Chair.
And in particular...
Mr. Hines, I've got a question here at the committee. Representative Ramos.
Harold, good afternoon. Could you just define your relationship with Harry Noah for me, please, concisely?
Representative Ramos, through the chair, is based on my understanding of our relationship after the discussions yesterday at our board meeting, Harry Noah has been charged to work on a project by the governor that links the North Slope directly to areas inside the state without any dependence on a big pipeline being built, and that we are working in total cooperation with them. As a matter of fact, we will probably provide the contracting support and other things during a phase where he revisits the issues related to which routes and alignments and other configurations are in the state's best interest. And we're certainly supportive of that. And we indicated yesterday that, if anything, we have a lot of issues related to trying to make that happen as quickly and as efficiently as possible. In addition to his work, we believe that there are other ongoing efforts related to the open season, that the propane extraction on the North Slope, that warrant continuing on those efforts at this time because they have issues of their own and timelines of their own that are important.
Representative Ramos, follow
up. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Harold, you said working with him. Do you recognize your effort to, do you see your effort as working with him or being deferential to Harry Noah and Governor Palin when it comes to building an in-state bullet line that moves gas from north to south in a pipeline? Do you see yourself as deferential to Harry Noah and the governor's interests?
Representative Ramos, through the chair, ANGDA, as a matter of project work, is not working on what you've called a bullet line. We have not worked on a line directly to the North Slope, and certainly in that sense we are supportive of his effort. It represents one of several options that are available to the state that we believe are important. At the same time, we believe in parallel with that, we should pursue the other efforts that we've already started, one of which, for instance, is a spur line, which may make no difference in Fairbanks, but offers the communities in the Cook Inlet area significant advantages over a bullet line to the North Slope.
Mr. Chair, I'm trying to be as efficient with our time as possible. This time, Harold, you used the word supportive. The question I asked for you, do you see yourself as deferential to Harry Noah as the designated appointee of the governor to be the in-state pipeline coordinator? And that's the specificity with which I'm asking the question. It is the reason why I offered Amendment Number 1, and I would appreciate a more direct answer, please.
Representative Ramros, through the chair, it seems to us that AS 4141 is clear. I submitted to you this morning, and hopefully the members have in front of them, a letter opinion from the Attorney General that was issued Tuesday. And in that, it makes it fairly clear that the actions that ANGDA has taken are well within the statutory authority. I am not aware of any instructions from the governor that are counter to anything that is in that statute.
Mr. Chair, I'm not trying to be obtuse. I just want to get a straight answer. Do you see yourself as deferential to Harry Noah and to the governor's interest in building a in bullet line and using ANGDA's capacity to assist in that way? Do you see yourself as deferential to Harry Noah?
Representative Ramros, through the chair, Harold Hines personally works for the board of directors of ANGDA, and the board has been very clear that we are to work in full cooperation with Mr. Noah's efforts, and we've been doing that, and we will do that. And again, he represents the expression of the project to go to the North Slope directly for gas. At the same time, the board has not accepted that Harry Noah has authority over the matters that are prescribed in statute to be their authority.
Mr. Hines, do you have additional public testimony at this time?
Mr. Chairman, I again would just draw your attention to the memorandum from the Attorney General's office that was issued on Tuesday. To the extent that this legislation is viewed by some as being necessary to allow us to perform our duties, I think this memorandum makes it very clear that ANGDA has operated and will continue to operate well within its statutory authority, so the bill isn't necessary for that. On the other hand, I will tell you that in the longer run, as we look to what we believe the major contribution of ANGDA to the public benefit and good is, it is through the financing markets, and whether that be bonds or lines of credit or other banking instruments. This type of clarity proposed in this bill is very helpful in that regard. As you well know, when you go to do any banking or financial transaction with large sums of money, the legal requirements and the questions and all those things that are asked are very difficult. And in this case, the clarity provided by this bill is positive in the long run, and certainly would ask that you consider its passage.
Thank you, Harold. Next, let's move to Tom Lacoche or Lacoche.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Lacoche. I'm Mr. Chairman. My name is Tom Lacoche. I'm calling from Anchorage. I'm representing myself. I'm not a politician. I've been poking my nose into this issue, into energy as a whole here for a while, and I hope the committee will tolerate my frank interpretation of all of the political speak that's been going on here. From what I can gather here, is ANGDA has determined that it is an undue burden on the ratepayers in South Central to build a bullet line. That essentially, with all due deference to Representative Ramirez, is trying to get an inappropriate subsidy to his Fairbanks constituents to get natural gas into Fairbanks prior to building the main line. So we're all concerned about state revenues, declining revenues, and the cost of supplying energy here. And I think it's readily apparent that the public interest would be, and ratepayers would be better served if we spent that money into A, stopping the export of natural gas, B, developing the two TCF still in Cook Inlet, and we could still have enough money left over to give all of Representative Ramirez's constituents free propane in Fairbanks. You know, I would suggest other alternative means, but this is basically what this issue is boiling down to. Now, Mr. Baelish suggests we take the blinders off. I suggest he's taking only one blinder off. If you're going to intrude this far into the private sector, why not take the other blinder off and have state exploration and production in Cook Inlet? That would be much, much cheaper than either a spur line or a bullet line. That is clearly the issue here is. Representative Ramirez wants to serve his constituents. It comes at a cost, an undue burden to build a line all the way to South Central where we're exporting gas and still have reserves in the area. Take off the blinders. You're going to intrude into the private sector like this. Go ahead and do the exploration and production under state auspices. Get us the gas that we need. Stop the exports so we have time to explore and produce the additional 2 TCF in Cook Inlet. You've had presentations to this committee on the remaining reserves in Cook Inlet that could be easily exploited. We all know it would be way cheaper than building a bullet line or even a spur line. Well, let's use the resources where they are. Let's take the blinders all the way off. You're intruding in the private sector way beyond what is considered an appropriate measure. Go all the way. Let's stop fidgeting around with this. Let's have it as cheap as possible to the state treasury and get everybody served as well as possible. Let's explore other alternatives for heating and gas supply to Fairbanks. It could be done much cheaper than is proposed in the amendment and by Mr. Baelish and the administration and Mr. Ramirez. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Lockish, and apologize for mispronouncing your last name. Next, we'll go to Mr. Kendall. Are you online?
Hello?
Yes. Please identify yourself and your affiliation for the record, please.
Paul D. Kendall. And, you know, I want to, first of all, I always enjoy Mr. Locus' testimony. I'm just a simple man, gentlemen, but I remember a movie. Remember the movie called Body Snatchers? I'm beginning to think we have some mind snatchers up here because all we ever talk about is natural gas. It's like one natural gas moment after another, and we call that occupying one's mentality and attempting to shape their purview and character. I guess, first of all, I'd kind of like to see our own little public open season because I don't want anything to do with gas. I happen to think this inlet out here in Tidal and Wave, and not to mention the Kinnick Arm, where we've studied that channel for 25 years, I think, by the Rothschilds or something. But I think we can move into that inlet within 3 to 6 years and convert our Anchorage and Matsu area to all electric within 3 to 6 years, pretty easy. But here's the thing. I want to see some specificity. If you're going to propose a gas line for my people to be subjugated some later date by the unpredictability and volatility of gas and the fossil fuel and the carbon tax and everything else that goes with that, if you're going to take my people back in time and history from the leading technologies, then I want some type of an itemized and source certified about, for example, who's using the gas. And what I would mean by that is that each user would be named, the amount they're using would be declared. It'd also be given a sector of the economy status. And to give you an example of that, I would look down a certified a sheet, okay, by a certified source that has to go to jail if they lie. And I'd see the school district for a certain amount of gas use. I'd see a state facility, a city facility, a water, electric, a refinery, a federal, so that we can see exactly who's using this energy, this gas. Because I don't want it for my home. You're not gonna subjugate my people, okay, for this gas, for those of you that are hooked on old technologies. So by being able to see who's going to use, we'll know who's going to play and who's going to pay. And then I would think that what we would do is we would do some type of our own little, Mr. Hines is quite capable, and all of you, quite frankly, are, to have our own little miniature open season in the communities. So if the school district wants to be hooked and obligated to the financial terms of fossil fuels for the future, then let them obligate it so that I can stop my property tax, because I want my money sent to electricity and the new technologies, which are water partnership. And I guess in closing, I'm trying to look over my notes here. I just don't see, we need an itemized look to publish to who's you. Oh, the revenue, there's something I want to see. I'd like to see the total revenue that we're deriving from oil and gas with a 10-year itemized perspective. And I also want to see, I haven't seen from Mr. Hines, I don't think Mr. Ramirez or anybody, I want to see the itemized expenditures that we're paying for what they call natural or piped gas. Until we can see those, we're just shooting in the dark, and I continue to see bodies of representatives who profess to hold down a department. When you go to nail these boys to the stats, they all run out the door. It's as if our people have been hanging out for some time here and not doing the work they should have been doing. And I guess one more time here in closing, I really think this is from not having an energy policy leadership. For 2 years now, I've asked you folks and many others for a 3 to 5 day open forum on camera where we all determine where we're going, all the players, the oil companies, all of us, to see what we want to be for the future. And this way here, we can understand where we should go, because when you look at Mr. Haggison, for 2 years now, I'm not sure where we've been. It looks to me like he did all his focusing on the rural areas. And we should have had one exhibition after another of the leading solar manufacturer companies, the leading electric generator companies, the leading edge of electrical vehicles. China just announced, by the way, that in 3 years they'll lead the world in electric vehicles. And what's interesting is, if you read down past the article, about 4 paragraphs, they ask him, how are you going to do that? They're going to leap past any fossil fuel relevance at all. They're going to simply leap over, which is what the Americans used to do.
Mr. Kendall, can I ask you to direct your comments towards House Bill 163, please, and if you could summarize those?
Well, yes, that's more than forgiving. I think I've talked too long here. I would just say that if you're going to move any type of project, and I'll be calling back on a couple of others, but if you're going to move any type of project, I want to see the revenues and expenditures around that. Who's using, who's burning, and if anybody, let me sum this up, if anybody says the word proprietary or secret, they should be taken out to the woodshed and paddled, okay? There's no more proprietary or secret information around the public's life essential energy needs. And I thank you, gentlemen, for the awkward and harsh testimony here, so I'll get off here.
Thank you very much. Is there anyone else online who wishes to testify this afternoon? Is there anyone here in the audience who wishes to testify?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, Paul Foos, and I'm afraid I might be to blame for this legislation being before you today. I'll just pass these out. At one point here, we asked...
Paul, could you, for the record, state who you're representing?
I'm just representing myself. I'm a consumer of gas in South Central Alaska, and the reason I have anything to do with this is, having done some work on the Donlin Creek mine...
What are we passing out here?
I'm sorry. What it is, it's a Western Alaska Energy Corridor. It's the reason this bill is before you. I had just, you know, talked to some people in terms of the Donlin Creek mine, of an idea that you would run a gas spur line out and pick up the big mines as a base load and look at a possibility of feeding the villages with energy by doing this. Well, it turned out under ANGDA's authority, it was limited geographically where it could work, and that was an oversight. I did work on the drafting of the ANGDA statute, and that was an oversight, and that's all this bill does, is allows ANGDA to work in other parts of the state outside of the main corridor of the pipeline. The other place you might see it would be, if a gas line goes through Canada, would be a line down to Haines or down Taku to Southeast, so people of Southeast could have access to gas. That's really all this bill does. And I guess I'd just say one more thing, just in terms of the drafting. The bill was written so that the board was appointed by the governor and has been. And so in terms of cooperation, I think just as an observer of what's going on, the people that sit on the ANGDA board are maybe some of the governor's strongest supporters. I don't think it's a problem with cooperation.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. Fuse. Representative Johansson.
Yeah. I guess I don't know where... You're testifying on the bill. You support it, oppose it?
I'm supporting it because it says, or other regions within the state. And you'll see the letter on the back from Senator Hoffman asking ANGDA to analyze this proposal and do a baseline analysis of it. Is it feasible at all? And the administration had to write back and say, because of the way the statute's written, you can't operate outside of the pipeline corridor. So those words, within other areas of the state, would allow this type of analysis to be made. And if it were feasible for things like this to be done to bring gas to the rest of Alaska, southeastern and western Alaska.
Representative Johansson.
Thank you. And I already scolded my friend to my right here about dropping stuff on the committee at the last minute. And I mean, we've had this bill for a couple weeks, and these memos have been around for quite a while. So I just wish you would have been able to get this to us
earlier,
because we're almost ready to move the bill, and I, you know, can't digest this information prior to that. So I'd appreciate that being sent to us prior.
Thank you, Representative Johansson, through the chair. I just felt that kind of the need just to step up, because it seemed the discussion that was taking place in testimony was not really related to what the bill did. It's very simple. Just expands the geographical area.
Thank you, Mr. Fuse, for coming forward. Not seeing any additional questions from committee members. Not seeing any additional testimony here in the audience or hearing any more online. Public testimony will be closed. And we'll move into committee discussion. Representative Dahlstrom.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would like to make a motion if you're ready.
Oh, I would.
You wish to discuss?
Representative Rammers, discussion before we move the bill?
Yes, please.
If we are moving too slowly for you, let us know.
Yeah. Mr. Chair, I never heard an answer from Harold Hines to a direct question that I asked four times. And you see the reason why I offered amendment number one is I don't get what ANGDA's doing. And I see this bill, looking at it, I see this bill, it says an act clarifying the purpose of ANGDA in the title, but then it goes on to expand the authority of ANGDA, and I thought that's what we heard from Harold, and it makes me uncomfortable. It makes me uncomfortable that the language in HB 63 is being amended into other bills in this building as we speak, and I don't like House Bill 163. And I intend to object to it and ask for a vote, and I intend to vote against it and to be a do not pass on HB 163. I think it's dangerous, and I think it gives more authority to ANGDA when they're not demonstrating that they're able to move responsibly with the administration presently. And I'm very unimpressed with the testimony that was offered by the Executive Director, Harold Hines, who is somebody I have a great deal of respect for, but not in the way that he's handling himself in relation to these recent developments and trying to find direction and a leader for an in-state gas pipeline.
Additional committee discussion? If not, Representative Dahlstrom.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I wish to move House Bill number 163, version A, with attached physical note and individual recommendations.
And I'll object.
Since there's been an objection, clerk, please take the roll.
Representative Grammers?
No.
Representative Johansson?
Yes.
Representative Peterson?
No.
Representative Tuck?
Yes.
Representative Dahlstrom?
Yes.
Co-Chair Millett is absent. Co-Chair Edmund?
Yes.
Four yea and two nay.
With that, the bill moves from committee, and we'll take a brief at ease to sign the committee document. Two, and it's the chair's intent to have a brief presentation from the administration's representative, Mr. Balash, entertain any committee discussion, and then to set the bill aside for further discussion at a later time. Mr. Balash?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Again, for the record, my name is Joe Balash. House Bill 182 is a joint effort by the governor, the utilities, and the Alaska Energy Authority to bring together for the purposes of joint planning, operation, and investment in the Rail Belt electric grid. It is a product that was under development over the course of the last year and on into the session here. We've continued to have discussion with the utilities, both individually and jointly. The legislation contemplates a two-step process. The bill would put into effect the corporate governance structure. Work would go on this interim. An integrated resource plan is under development by the Alaska Energy Authority. That plan would then be picked up, and in combination with the utilities themselves through this corporate board, a transition plan and finance plan and package would be brought to the legislature next session to take the second step and complete the steps necessary to move the Rail Belt forward for the next generation. Earlier this week, on Tuesday, the boards of all six utilities gathered in Anchorage at the Dena'ina Center, and I think it's the fairest way to characterize is that the boards decided that they wanted to have a larger hand in the crafting of the governance structure itself, and they also wanted to see the outcome of the IRP, and so with our cooperation, their agreement, what we would like to do is set this bill aside for the year. The six boards have put together or will put together a task force that will meet for the first time in May once they've gone through their cycle of board elections and organizations. We'll meet again a couple of times throughout the summer, and by October 1st have a final report on what they recommend be the corporate governance structure to be held by this type of corporation for the region. That will give us the opportunity to continue the integrated resource plan and then in the fall take up the work on the transition and finance package that would then be brought all together for a single step next January as opposed to two steps as originally contemplated. I hope to have a letter signed by the chairs of all six boards from the Rail Belt Utilities later today or tomorrow. As soon as I get that, I'll be happy to bring it to the chair's office and have it distributed to the members. And with that, I thank the chair for the time to address the committee and give everybody an update on where things stand, and look forward to seeing you over the interim when we have a final report from the task force.
Thank you, Mr. Balash. Any committee discussion or questions for Mr. Balash? Not hearing any. House Bill 182 will then be set aside, and we brought up at a later date, most likely next year, after the work, as you described, Mr. Balash, has been completed.
Mr. With Chairman?
Representative Johansson?
I don't know. Do we need to adopt this draft, or did we already do that, or you leave it over the summer? Is it?
Representative Johansson, it was the chair's intent to get an update on the status of the Rail Belt, the utilities meeting in Anchorage, that any sort of amendments or changes or committee substitutes would be dealt with at a later date. So, thank you. Next, we have noticed on the agenda is House Bill 191. Nuclear power production, waste, and transportation. Good afternoon, Jeannie.
Good afternoon. I'm Jeannie Austin, staff to Representative Craig Johnson. And you have before you in your packet a House Bill 191 and also a CS House Bill 191. And how would you like to proceed?
Well, what we'd like to do is to have a discussion on the bill today, and with understanding that we will hear it at a later hearing afterwards. So if you want to walk the committee through the bill, it's a pretty lengthy bill. Maybe start with just sort of a general description, and then we'll field questions from the committee
okay.
at that point.
Basically, what it does is take the old statutes that we have and bring them up to date. It makes a level playing field for all of your alternative energy. Our statutes do not have the ability to use nuclear, and also the regulations in AEA have not allowed nuclear to be a alternative energy. Webster's New World College Dictionary indicates that the fuel sources, alternative fuel sources, are unconventional and non-traditional, such as nuclear energy. In the packet that you have a number of reports done by Dr. Anderson, and also information dealing with the actual statutes and changes to the from the bill to the CS. There is a CS because we did receive a some information from the Division of Investments about the statutes that are in on the books right now that indicate the alternative energy loan is up to 15% for those loans, and this was in the 80s. So we've capped it at 8%, very similar to House Bill 196. And also we've taken away the sweep.
Can I interject? For purposes of discussion, Representative Johansson, would you move the bill? And I'll object for purposes of discussion.
You want the CS adopted?
Please.
I'll move CS for House Bill 191, version E, as the working document for the committee.
And I'll object for purposes of discussion. Thank you.
In the guide for Alaskan communities that was put out by AEA, they do list nuclear energy as one of the many new technologies that are good for the state in some ways, and Galena is one of the closest to having a suitcase nuclear reactor for energy. Dittman did a poll in March of this year, and nuclear energy by the respondents indicated that they would rather have nuclear over coal, over oil, and over water wave action electricity. So it's becoming safer, it's becoming a better way to receive energy in the rural areas. It's a ways away. Galena is probably 2015 before theirs would come into effect, but they've gone through a number of steps with the NERC, Nuclear Energy Regulatory Committee. So this would just change some statutes in order for nuclear energy to be considered an alternative energy.
Thank you for that sort of general overview of the bill before us. Any members' questions of the bill sponsors, staff? Representative Peterson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So if we declared that nuclear energy was an alternative form of energy, that would mean that Galena and maybe other areas would be able to apply for state loans and grants. This would be considered an alternative energy.
That's correct, through the chair. Yes.
One more
question. A follow-up, Representative Peterson.
Thank you. So you're talking about a suitcase nuclear energy plant. What size is that? How many megawatts does it produce? And do you have any idea what the cost of that would be?
Dr. Anderson is on, and as well as Marvin Yoder, who was the Galena contact for making that. But it is, I think it's 10 megawatts. And I don't know the actual price of it. We did try to get a Toshiba representative, but I believe Mr. Yoder or Dr. Anderson could answer some of those questions a little better.
And we have both those individuals signed up to testify on the bill. So with that question sort of
hanging. I'll defer my questions until they testify.
Okay. Well, let's then go to public testimony. Don Landerson, are you online and prepared to offer your testimony?
Yes, I am available. Can you hear me?
Yes, sir, we can hear you loud and clear. If you could identify yourself for the name.
Okay. Yes, Chairman Edgman and members of the Energy Committee, my name is Donald Anderson. I'm testifying today as a citizen who's interested in energy production with no fiduciary interest beyond that of a regular household consumer. I am not a nuclear engineer, although my education included some coursework in that area. I'm here to ask you to support HB 191. I consider this bill a cleanup of state statutes and is designed to level the energy production playing field. We badly need to allow Alaskans to choose their generating technology based on economic, safety, health, and reliability criteria. Under current law, what may be the best technology in some cases is not under active consideration. Specifically, use of nuclear energy as the heat source to drive generating turbines has some specific advantages for locations where fuel transportation is costly or sporadic. It also provides a steady, reliable source of baseload power, unlike wind or tides or the sun. Nuclear power plants cost a great deal, but the fuel costs are very low. The energy density of the fuel is 2.7 million times as much as coal. The resulting overall costs are about the same as coal-fired power and much lower than liquid fuel or natural gas, although these are location-dependent. At present, the smallest reactor design being prepared for licensing is the 10-megawatt unit that's proposed for Galena. This is far larger than needed by the smaller Alaskan villages, but these small units may be appropriate in many locations around the state, such as Bethel or Copper Valley, Cordova, Dillingham, Galena, Kodiak, Kotzebue, Naknek, Nome, Tok, Unalakleet, Unalaska, and Yakutat, but a few others. Jeannie Austin has been kind enough to duplicate some material I've written, so it can be included in your packets. Although I doubt you have the time to read much before the end of the session, you might put a check mark on the paper that I prepared for the board of Chugach Electric, giving some history and background on nuclear power, and a paper I prepared on the disposal of high-level nuclear waste. I hope you'll promptly move the HB 191 forward. The lack of a full range of energy options means plans may be delayed, unnecessarily expensive, or less safe than they otherwise would be. Hey, thanks for your attention. I'll answer any question to the extent I can do so.
Thank you, Mr. Anderson. Not seeing any questions around the table, we'll next go to Marvin Yoder. Marvin, if you would identify yourself and affiliation for the record, please.
Yes, my name is Marvin Yoder. I was in Galena, and again, my main reason for requesting this particular bill is that I think there needs to be lots of options on the table. Alaska is a very diverse state. There are areas where there's a good wind power or geothermal power or hydropower. Galena didn't have to be one of those places. And so as we looked at all the various options that we could find, we came to the conclusion, actually with the help of a study by the Department of Energy, who evaluated all those things for us, they came out with a proposal that actually nuclear power for both the environment and for the cost would be the best option for Galena. Again, this bill is meant just to level the playing field so that all options are available. And those communities that have other options may choose those, and those that want to choose this one would be able to, but there would be no prescription in that way. So basically, there are three different companies that are offering small nuclear reactors. Just for the record, the main nuclear plants that are being built in the U.S. are about 1,500 megawatts, since the rail belt is only 800 megawatts. We're not looking at any large-scale nuclear projects up here. This would be small regional ones, hopefully eventually connect some villages into small grids. But again, it's meant to be a one more alternative to use to get the communities off a high price of diesel. With that, I'll take any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Yoder. Any questions from committee members? Representative Dahlstrom.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Yoder, if I heard you correctly, you stated that this legislation was done at your request. Did I hear that correctly?
Actually, we had last year asked for a record from legal services on all the different statutes that dealt with nuclear, and we got that last year. When I went to talk to some people, they said that Representative Johnson already had a bill he was working on that had nuclear in it. And so we actually joined up and gave them that information. And so they had already started preparing something. This was simply an add-on.
Follow-up?
Senator Dahlstrom.
Thank you, Mr. Yoder. And when you refer to we, can you tell me who the we is in your group that was working on this?
Well, actually, I guess I was the one that was down there. Don Anderson and I had talked before, as well as some others, but that's kind of where it started. Mr. Anderson and I both were very active in trying to see something happen.
Thank you.
Mr. Yoder, what's the upfront or the capital cost involved with the smaller nuclear facility, the 10-megawatt version?
Quite frankly, the Toshiba's revising numbers. In the presentations I made, I had a number years ago. There's a 10-megawatt unit and a 50-megawatt unit. And what they had done is actually amortized the capital cost. And this is a 30-year fix. They fuel it for 30 years, and you don't have to refuel. So they amortized this out over 30 years. And what they had actually said is that if you bought the plant, installed it, and operated it for 30 years, the cost for a 50-megawatt unit would be around 6 or 7 cents a kilowatt. The 10-megawatt unit would probably be three times that simply because it's economies of scale, and a lot of the components are the same. We have actually asked them to update that because that number was 2 years old, and so we're still waiting for the final number. But the estimates are that amortizing the capital cost and the operating costs over the 30 years is probably going to bring the 10 megawatt in around 20 cents and the 50 megawatt unit under 10.
So in terms of the capital costs associated on the front end of the project, the bricks and mortar aspect of it?
The original number was $2,500 a kilowatt for the 50-megawatt unit. But that was all calculated as part of the whole package.
So in terms of how many millions here, can you help me sort of?
Well, a 50-megawatt unit at $2,500 a kilowatt would be $125 million. I expect it'll be closer to 150 or 200 by the time they're done.
Additional questions, Representative Tuck?
No, thank you.
Okay.
One thing that you should know in regards to that is Galena's paying 70 cents per kilowatt hour now, and so this 20 cents would be quite a drop. One other thing is...
Can you put yourself on the record?
I'm sorry. This is Jeannie again with Representative Craig Johnson's office. The federal stimulus money has funds available for alternative energy. So there is funding there that could be available should we identify nuclear energy as a alternative fuel. And also, APA has written a letter of support, and you'll find that in your packet that came in today. They, too, feel that the statutes need to be updated, and they use the word contemporized, and I think they're right on. They believe that there has to be flexibility in communities able to choose what works best for them.
Okay, is there anyone else here in the audience who wishes to testify on House Bill 191 and to the bill sponsor staff? Is there any further information that you want to provide the committee at this time?
No.
Okay. So, Representative Peterson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I was wondering if someone could tell me what the plan would be to do with the spent nuclear rods or the nuclear waste at the end of the 30 years? Is there a plan in place for that at this point?
I'm Marvin Yoder. I could answer that.
Mr. Yoder?
Basically, through the chair, the idea here is that this is a self-contained unit. It's a sealed unit. The plan from Toshiba from the beginning was that the nuclear component and the coolant, which is sodium, would be sealed in this container, and that at the end of the 30 years, the entire container would leave the state and would be dealt with someplace else besides in Alaska.
Follow up, Mr. Peterson. Representative Peterson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. But we have yet to find a location that will accept spent nuclear waste as that I'm aware of at this point. So if we end up building this and we find no place else to dispose of the waste, then we're going to end up having to try to keep it here in Alaska somewhere, it seems to me.
Response, Mr. Yoder?
I do understand that nuclear waste is a problem. There has been a program started for recycling nuclear waste, which certainly we're in favor of. We think that that's important for the United States government to do that. That'll reduce the volume of the waste by 90% and will also reduce the radioactivity by 90%. This happens to be the type of reactor that would burn recycled fuel if they ever did that. Other countries are doing it and reducing waste through that method. I do understand that it is a problem in the U.S. However, the U.S. has been charging every nuclear plant a back-end fee, so the federal government has $5 billion to deal with it, just not the political will at this time to make it happen.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Ms. Austin, for bringing the bill forward. Thank you, Mr. Yoder and Mr. Anderson, for being online. As we stated earlier, the intent with House Bill 191 was to sort of introduce it to the committee, have an introductory hearing, and then to set it aside and bring it back probably sometime next session, if not while the Energy Committee has its hearings around the state in the interim, on the House Bill 218 proposing to form a Department of Energy. Along with Co-Chair Millett, it's the intent of the co-chair and certainly the committee to have a discussion in the off-season, if you will, on this bill as well as the next bill that we're about to hear. Before we conclude our hearing on House Bill 191, staff informs me that I need to remove my objection so we can have the CS before the committee. And with that, Jeannie, thank you very much. We will next move to House Bill 148, Representative Guerra.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members of the committee, if I could ask my aide, Katie Conway, to come up here as a lifeline.
Mr. Chairman?
Okay. Representative Johansson?
Could we have the camera moved or directly behind Representative? People will recognize him.
That would probably be most energy efficient.
My wife's going to ask me over the next 9 months why I keep my back to her, and I'm going to have to tell her that's, you know, because she's used to it. Mr. Chair, my aide Katie and I, Representative Bill Thomas and his staff, have worked together on putting together an energy efficiency bill, and for these reasons. Most states right now have an energy plan. This state doesn't have a statewide energy plan. And it's not just a document. An energy plan isn't just a piece of paper. Energy efficiency in the sort of alternative energy world is considered it's considered the fifth fuel, right? I mean, when we talk about energy efficiency, about wind power. We talk about solar power. We talk about nuclear power. Those are alternative ways to get off fossil fuels. The best way to reduce emissions, and this has been recognized by folks who study the issue, is to reduce the amount of energy you use. There's a term that they've developed, and you'll see it in an Economist article that's being handed out. While most fuels are judged in how many megawatts they produce and what kind of emissions they produce. Energy efficiency has now been termed negawatts, right? It's a way to reduce the amount of energy use, and countries are doing it, states are doing it because it saves money. In Anchorage, a pilot project on replacing lighting has been started, and the city of Anchorage estimates that they're going to save over $1 million a year in energy use by doing the lighting project. Lighting replacement, you've probably heard this in other presentations, is probably the quickest way to save money. It's the fastest way to earn money from doing something smart. HB 148 has two main components. One is to come up with a grant fund, sort of like we've done in the Renewable Energy Fund. And the grant fund will be used to fund construction projects and renovation projects for entities that aren't state entities. So the university, school districts, municipalities. And the grant fund will be targeted towards those projects that bring the savings back the quickest, the most benefit per dollar spent. That's the grant fund portion of it, and certainly the legislature in a future year would have to decide how much to fund the grant fund part. The other part of the bill says for state buildings we should have an energy plan. We should focus on projects that pay for themselves within 15 years. That's one of the provisions. It says that we should do what roughly half the states in the country have done, which is to adopt some sort of energy efficiency code as a guideline. And so we recommend the most prevalent version of an energy efficiency code, which is the IEEC. And we certainly would allow exceptions for the things that don't make sense in Alaska, that don't make sense in cold climates. The third major thing that we do is we encourage the state to do what it's done on a pilot project basis right now. And there's a representative from DOT here who can talk about it. DOT has done a pilot project on what's called performance contracting. This is becoming popular around the country as a way to do energy efficiency at no upfront cost by the state. Performance contracting done by companies like Siemens, and Siemens has done the project in Alaska. Performance contracting is this. You hire a private contractor. They get paid as a portion of the energy savings that they provide the state over the long term. And DOT could explain the performance contracting project we've had here. We've done it in the Diamond Courthouse in three other locations around the state as a pilot. And so part of the energy plan would be use performance contracting where it's the most efficient way to do it. But those are really the two components. Members of this committee are probably at least as up to speed on the issue and the need for an energy plan as our office is. There are other side benefits. Like it or not, probably the construction industry is going to be moving towards these codes already, and you might as well take advantage of the expertise that they're going to bring by adopting the codes that they're going to be geared up to adhere to. HFC has already adopted the International Energy Efficiency Code for home residents, for residential properties. This bill doesn't deal with residential properties, though that wouldn't necessarily be a bad idea if folks wanted to consider that. The Alaska Home Builders support adoption of the IEC statewide. HFC is already doing it on construction that they finance, and roughly half the states are doing it also. So Mr. Chair, I mean, those are the main components of the bill. One is a grant fund to fund those projects that would make us money in the long run, essentially. And one is an energy plan to require energy efficiency construction and retrofits in those projects that would also make the state money. In the long run, the fiscal note on this bill is a negative. It's focused on doing things that save the state money over the long term. But without a statute, it's not going to happen because the political process is aimed towards what does it cost us this year? And that's often the thinking in many areas. And this bill says, well, what's it going to cost us over 10 years? What's it going to cost us over 15 years? And the answer to those questions, if the bill is implemented, is less money than if we don't adopt this, right? So with that, I'm happy to take questions. There has been some discussion. We've worked closely with DOT on this. There's been some question about who should administer the grant fund, and the problem is the state doesn't really have an energy agency. I mean, we have AEA that has a limited role that's been expanding. We have AHFC that's done energy efficiency in residences. We don't have an agency that does energy efficiency in residences and commercial buildings. So I'm open to the concept of whether it should be AEA or AHFC that runs the grant fund. Maybe it's DOT that runs the grant fund, since DOT manages all the state facilities. Unfortunately right now we don't have an energy agency that does all of our energy work. So you sort of have to pick one that does half or the other that does half, and it's hard to say which is the best agency to do it. And you'll probably need some input on that. But there's a lot of expertise at DOT. You can probably learn a lot by having folks come here that started some of this energy efficiency work. I think the municipalities project in Anchorage has been pretty instructive, and people have been able to glean from their cost savings how much money you could save in Fairbanks by replacing road lighting, how much money you could save in other places by replacing road lighting. I mean, that's what, I guess the governor and others have called it the low-hanging fruit, right? That's the easiest way to make the money back the quickest. But if the state doesn't adopt an energy plan, what we're going to keep doing is spending more money today and over the long term, because we're not going to be forced to plan. An energy plan would sort of force us to plan, and it would force us to save money. So with that, I'm happy to take any questions.
Thank you, Representative Guerra. Any questions for Representative Guerra, Representative Tuck, and then Representative Ramos?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You talked about there's a pilot program right now going on with Siemens, is that correct?
Yeah.
And can you tell us how that's working right now? Is that underneath one of your options of having, where they take part of the savings with that, or are they contracted to do that?
You'll get a better answer from DOT, and Joel St. Albans is here, and he can tell you how that's going. In the energy plan that we propose, part of the energy plan would say where it's efficient that states should do performance contracting with private agencies to the extent the state thinks that's the best way to get the money back. But on the pilot project, I think is four properties, including the Diamond Courthouse. DOT can tell you how it's been working.
Okay. Thank you.
Representative Ramos.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. President Gary, you're talking about a comprehensive energy plan. Are you doing this on your own, or are you working with the co-chairs of the Energy Committee who have indicated they're working on a comprehensive energy plan through the interim?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Our offices have certainly worked with Senator Wielkowski's office, and they have a bill that is similar and more comprehensive, I would say. We've worked with Representative Thomas's office, and I think the staff that have been working on this have been working together as well.
Thank you.
Well, Representative Guerra, not seeing any additional questions.
Oh,
I'm sorry, Representative Johansson.
On page 3, lines 4 and 5, it says that under F, the grant program gives priority to projects that serve municipalities and unincorporated communities with population less than 15,000. So if the goal is to save money, priority to the smaller communities, you can save a lot more money doing something in a big community. Is that prioritized out the way this is read?
Thank you. Through the chair, Representative Johansson, we'll want them to consider three factors, and the committee might decide to add others. The first factor is which projects will have the highest level of energy savings over the long term. And we also would like to have a priority in smaller communities for a couple of reasons. In most smaller communities, the cost of energy is much higher than in the largest communities. The per dollar savings are going to be higher there probably, and probably the need for the savings in those governments is higher than the need in the biggest municipalities. I don't mean to discriminate against my own town, but we tend to have a bigger tax base, and we tend to be able to do some of these things a little bit more easily than some of the smaller communities. But it wouldn't be a flat ban to money going to any of the larger communities. That would be one of the three factors. Highest savings, we'd like it to go to not just the big three, so that's why we've put the population limit of 15,000 people or smaller And then we also want to encourage communities to seek funding from other sources. So that's the reason for the third factor.
Thank you. I have another question, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Johansson.
Page 2, lines 27 and 28, it references two separate standards, International Energy Conservation Code, and it says, or the minimal standards listed in Leadership in Energy and Environmental Design. Then on page 4, line 18, it only references one of those standards. Can you talk about the different standards, who writes them, what the difference is, and why it's not in the second reference?
Right. The first one that you mentioned, where we give an option to localities, that says if you're going to apply for grant funding, you should comply with either the IEEC or what's called the LEED standards. And the reason we put both of those down for when municipalities and the university and other governmental entities apply is that some already use one or the other. We don't want to make a community that's already adopted LEED standards to follow the IEC. We don't want to make a community that's already adopted the IEC to follow LEED. They're both highly regarded energy efficiency standards, and if a local government has already adopted one, we don't feel like we need to second-guess them. The second part that only references the International Energy Efficiency Code, the IEC, that's the part that falls under the energy plan, and that says if the state is going to undertake to build large construction, the new construction should follow the IEC. You essentially have to pick one of the two. The IEC seems to be more broadly accepted. It's what is mentioned in the federal stimulus legislation. It's what AHFC is following for residential properties, and it's probably the more widely accepted energy efficiency code.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, we also have, I think evidently online, is the representative from DOT, Joel St. Aubin. Joel, were you online to testify or just for any questions?
To the chair, this is Joel St. Aubin, Chief of Statewide Public Facilities. I'm available to answer any questions you might have.
Questions, committee members? House Bill 148, Representative Ramos.
Sir, how much more does it cost to do a LEED building, and does this bill in any way ask people to meet the LEED standard, the LEED standard, when retrofitting buildings? I direct that to the sponsor also.
The cost to meet LEED, I would have to look at an individual building specific, but they're to get the LEED certification on a project that we're currently working on in Bethel is approximately a $250,000 addition to the building.
What's the cost of the building through the chair? Is that a 10% increase, 5%?
Less than a 1% increase.
What size building are we looking at, or what are we talking about here, scale-wise?
It is a roughly a 20,000 square foot building.
Okay.
And with a project budget of overall budget of $16 million or so. It's located in Bethel.
Representative Garrett, did you have additional comments?
Yeah. Mr. Chair, the bill doesn't apply to private buildings at all, first of all. The only LEED provision is if a municipality has preferred and chosen, if their community has chosen LEED over the IEEC, then they could choose to follow LEED. That would be a local community decision. But that it would relate to government buildings, not private buildings. And there's no retrofit requirement in the bill. Except actually for state buildings, if the part of the state energy plan would be, if you feel like you could make cost savings over 15 years, save more than the cost of the retrofit, then we would encourage the state to do that.
Representative Peterson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. That was my question. What's the average payback time if you increase the standards to, say, LEED or the other international standard?
Mr. Chair, I don't think I have an answer for. I think the different kinds of things you can do with energy efficiency are disparate enough that I don't think you can pick an average payback time. I think a lot of what the IEEC does is is insulation, is sort of seal-tight things, is windows. You know, those are the places where you save some of the most amount in energy costs. And the quickest way to save money, the payback time for lighting tends to be about 2 years. So if you're going to do lighting efficiency around the state, which, you know, I think if we passed nothing else, passing a lighting efficiency bill out of this legislature, I think would be a great thing. That saves money within 2 years. That's why people sort of jump at lighting retrofits first.
Representative Guerra, how do these codes in terms of application in Arctic environment, I'm thinking of the Cold Climate Center, the Alaska Center for Energy and Power, and other sort of entities that are doing research on what works and what doesn't work in an Arctic environment. How do these codes sort of stand the test of some of this newer, more emerging technology that might be coming online?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My aide Katie is furiously writing me a note. And I think when you have a comprehensive hearing on the bill, I think you would want to have the folks from the Cold Climate Housing Center here. I think they are supportive of the IEEC standards, but I think there are also some standards that some minor parts of these codes that don't make sense. I think one of them, I can't remember whether it's LEED or IEC, I think it's LEED, has a preference for white as the color, because in warmer climates, white obviously is more efficient. Well, it doesn't make sense up here, really. And so we have a provision in our bill that says for those provisions that don't make sense given our climate conditions, there's no real need to follow them. There probably aren't that many, but there are probably some that just don't make sense here. And the one that people always point to is the preference for white as the color.
Well, your staff stopped writing, so you must have done a good job.
Maybe I got the answer right.
If there isn't any further questions directed toward Mr. St. Aubin, we do have Brian Butcher from HFC in the audience. Brian, I think you've signed up as well to testify, or
if there's any questions.
If any questions for HFC relative to the bill. So I don't think, Representative Guerra, we have anybody else lined up to testify. We did sort of commit to having as the previous bill, having a brief sort of introductory on the unveiling of the bill, if you will, and that we would sort of incorporate it into the committee's plans during the interim. I guess with that, any sort of final comments before we wrap things up at this moment?
Yeah, I'm just only this. I mean, there are a lot of there are some good pieces of legislation floating around the building, right? I mean, and you know the balance between picking something that's more comprehensive and less comprehensive, and they both have their pros and cons. I would say a lot of work has gone into this piece of legislation between ours and Representative Thomas's office and coordinating with staff. So we'd be happy to be part of the discussion as we go forward. And I would really encourage the committee, if it looks during the next year like nothing's going to pass, to try and put together something on lighting. I mean, that's almost the no-brainer that if we do nothing else, we should do yesterday.
Representative Garrett, if you did have additional backup for the bill that we don't have in the packet, I think we'd be interested in getting that backed up, but certainly working with your staff throughout the interim to the extent that, you know, that we can, because this is a pretty important component of the overall energy plan, and that certainly, as that old saying goes, the cheapest energy is the energy you don't use. And so with that, not hearing any additional comments from the committee members.
I got a comment.
Representative Tuck, you have a knack for the last second question.
Well, I was just waiting for the time to come up for a committee discussion. I serve on the Anchorage School District School Board. We did do a pilot program where we did six schools, and we went in for energy efficiency, and it was amazing the results that came back to where we're going to go ahead and start applying to other schools. I just wanted to throw that comment in there that for municipalities, for school districts, you know, when we have competing demands for a limited amount of dollars, one of the things that we can do to free up money to do better things for our schools is energy efficiency. And if there's any way that the state can participate in making it easier for schools, I fully support.
Okay. Thank you very much, Representative Guerra and staff Katie, for coming forward. And
thank you.
Before we adjourn the committee for the day, just to let everyone know that obviously we're under the 24-hour rule, so we'll do our best to notify you in terms of any meetings. I'm seeing smiles around the face around the table here. And with that, we'll adjourn the committee at 4:33 Thursday, April 9th.